In this video, I traveled to Sutherland, Oregon, to sit down and interview a man who spent more time face-to-face with an actual Bigfoot than any other person I've ever heard a story about. This interaction with a Bigfoot while gold mining affected this man so much that he commissioned an artist to build a lifelike representation of exactly what he saw. This thing was 9 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and probably about 900 to 1,000 pounds if I had to guess. But you're going to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. And the entire time I was interviewing him, there was a parade going on that lasted 2 hours. So once in a while, you will hear a big block Chevrolet engine or a turbo diesel Ford revving its engine. It is what it is. Enjoy. All right, I am in an undisclosed location in Oregon right now, and I'm sitting here with, Jay. Jay, I met up with a friend of mine who is a big-time radio host, and she's been around a long time, and she's married to a guy was a sheriff. He was also special forces, etc., and he told me about your story, and he explained to me that you had such a unexpected interaction. And from what I've gathered, you've had an interaction that lasted longer than anyone else has ever run into. To be honest, no one's ever had... How about this? You tell the story. Have at it.
Okay. It was April 10th, 2016.
So in another interview, you inadvertently gave the wrong date.
I did.
Okay.
After the fact, I was thinking about it, and in an interview I'd done before, I'd said it was March 10th. But I Googled the calendar for March 10th, 2016, and that was wrong. It had to have been April 10th, because the day that this happened was clearly on a Sunday. I have Sundays off, and so did my friends at the time.
Got it.
So it was the only way it could have been. So, yeah, I do want to make that correction. It was April 10th, 2016.
Okay.
And it really come down to my friends and I are interested in gold prospecting. You know, it's a fun recreation and hobby to do.
So for the city folks, when you say gold prospecting, you're literally out there with sieves and pans in the rivers looking for gold flake, looking for the color. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, yeah.
All right.
We're out there with gold pans, picks, shovels, sluice boxes, tools to help get the gold out of the cracks and crevices of the rock and stuff like that. And so anyway, I like to read about the subject, especially living in this state.
The subject of prospecting?
Of gold prospecting.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Back to the gold rush and, you know, where all the big strikes were made and so on and so forth.
It's sad how many people don't even understand the value of gold anymore. I mean, it's crazy. And gold is what made America what it is.
That's right.
People weren't going west for no reason.
That's right.
Was all angry Native Americans, wildlife, and whatever else. But gold, send the army. We're going to get it, you know?
That's how we settled the West.
You bet.
You have to have the money to build.
You bet.
And do all those things. You're darn right. And it's tangible. You know, it's wealth that is tangible.
That's right. It's not ones
digital.
And zeros. Right.
Right.
You can't wake up and all of a sudden an unknown entity, some country just hacked the banks and everybody's money's gone.
That's right.
Because that's a coming, but at any rate.
Yeah, so I don't know. I read about it, and a lot of it is I read also about these lost gold mines.
Yeah.
And a lot of those I chalk up to have probably already been refound, but they didn't know that they'd found them, and they probably, you know, been worked out, but nevertheless.
That makes sense.
I'm an adventurer, you know, by nature, and I like a good mystery. And I was reading about this supposed lost gold mine. It's pretty famous for our area, actually. And and it had a lot of good details to it.
What do you mean, details?
Like where its location could be.
So are you saying like it, like because it's lost.
It's lost.
Okay, I gotta interrupt. There's a pretty high end hot rod parade going on outside. So if the audio's a little bad, it is what it is. We're in America, so suck it up, buttercups. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
It's got nothing to do with you, bro. It's all good.
I didn't even think about it.
It's all good.
To be honest with you. I'm reading about this story. It's got a lot of clues in this story of where the location can be. So much so that I think I've got the area nailed down.
So you're literally... I didn't catch this. I listened to two of your other interviews, or at least one. You're searching for a place that you don't know where it is. You're looking for clues to find this. Oh, all right. Cool.
It's like a big-ass scavenger hunt.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I love a good mystery,
All right, cool,
it occupies the mind.
Yep.
And so, I've read about this story. I've read it several times over the years. I've read everything I possibly could. And I had this aha moment, an epiphany, as you could call it.
Yep.
So I call up my buddy Alan. And he's my friend, prospecting partner for this kind of stuff. And another friend is also Robert. And I call up Alan and I tell him, I say, hey, man, I says, what do you think of this story? And I relay the story, the lost gold mine, to him. And I give him my best guess of where I think we should start looking for this thing. And, of course, he's excited because, it's something for us to go chase down for the weekend.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Good, clean fun right there.
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
So, and I said, I asked if Robert was available, and he said, yeah. And then he had a neighbor. His name was Matt, and he was evidently into gold prospecting, too. And I hadn't ever met Matt yet before. And I said, fine, it's a party. More people love the recreation, the better. Let's go have a good time. And so it was on. And so we got up pretty early in the morning, got on the road, because it was going to take at least a couple hours to get there. It was quite the drive to get all the way there. And so we're going there. And like I said, it's the first time I kind of met Matt. And I found out through conversation that, Matt is a non-believer when it comes to the subject of Bigfoot.
How did the subject of Bigfoot come up? Was it just something you're talking about when you're heading way off into the woods in Oregon? I mean,
of course, we're living in Oregon, man.
It's a reality.
The Pacific Northwest here, so
right.
Naturally, amongst friends and stuff like that, the subject comes up and we to talk about it.
And to back that up, everybody that I've met in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State, Northern California, in Oregon, they talk about Bigfoot like it's just in passing, like it's a large raccoon that shows up once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he doesn't do any damage to the house or anything, but
right.
He might go through the trash once in a while. It's just a thing. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if it was truly a public threat, they'd have no choice but to disclose it and bring it outright,
Right.
They don't want people getting hurt out there.
Right, right.
The government makes a lot of money on recreation.
You bet.
Okay, so,
you bet.
So we drive all the way there, and I find out through the process that all Matt, this friend of Alan and Robert's that I just met, is a non-believer, and I don't hold that against anybody. You try to believe whatever you want.
Right.
But it ensues into a bit of a debate and an argument. And anyway, I kind of drop it and just let it go because we're all here to have a good time. And so we arrive at the destination that I had picked out to search for this lost gold mine. If anything, maybe we can find a little bit of color in the creek. And we get out. And Matt and I are still kind of arguing over the Bigfoot thing, whether it's real or not. And then I happened to say, well, does anybody know a good Bigfoot call? Because we've all watched that TV show, Finding Bigfoot. We've seen Bobo make the calls, right? You know. So, of course, you know, everybody says no. And I said, well, I do. You want to hear it? And they said, yeah, okay, go for it. You know, and so I stand there and I want it to be as authentic as I can, right? I want to perform for my friends, right? So I go ahead and I belter it out and I make it really good. And they agree. That was good. You know,
plus you're a little pissed off still with their back and forth with Matt.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, I'm still kind of fuming over it, but I'm trying to keep my stuff together on it. And so I'm scoping the hillside there, the bank. You know, we got to get down into the creek and get our sluice boxes and gold pans and all of our tools down in through there. And
time to get to work.
Yeah, it's time to get to work.
And it's hard work too, correct?
Oh yeah, you're
basically fly fishing with 15 extra steps, fly fishing and weightlifting at the same time.
Yeah, but it's fun. You don't think about the labor involved.
Right.
You know.
Especially with the potential reward, I would imagine.
Oh yeah,
one hell of a drive right there, you know.
If you can find some color, great. You might be onto something.
Right.
It's that little illusion of I've got a lottery ticket, right?
Right. But heck yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, you're still just doing it for fun. And so I'm scanning for a location to get through the brush and start working down through the trees there. And I'm slipping on my backpack and I say, okay, it looks like we can kind of get through the brush here and we'll get down to the creek, and everybody agrees.
Let me ask you real quick. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'll forget. Personally, you're carrying a backpack?
Yeah.
You got your backpack with essentials and such, I'm guessing, but you're also carrying other...
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're carrying the
sluice box. And
yeah. Stand by one sec. My truck alarm just went off.
Sure thing. So we're standing there at the vehicles, going to go down over the bank and work our way to the creek, and I'm standing there putting on my backpack, and what I had is I had a .40 caliber handgun in a holster, and I put that at the bottom of the backpack, and then I had these neoprene chest waders that fly fishermen use when they're standing in the water fishing.
Right.
And I had those rolled up very tightly like a cinnamon roll or like a sleeping bag.
Because, I mean, chest waders in a backpack, it takes up a lot of space.
It sure does,
It's worse than an insulated jacket, right?
It is.
Am I right? Okay.
Yeah, because they're, I don't know how a quarter inch thick or whatever they are. So... And it took a lot of working for me to get those darn hip waders shoved into that backpack. And then I had to get that zipper closed on the backpack and not bust the zipper at the seams.
Right.
So I throw the backpack on and grab a 5-gallon bucket. I might have grabbed a sluice box in the other hand. I don't remember now, but it's probably unimportant. And I said, okay, and everybody had grabbed sluice boxes and tools and things too. And I said, okay, I guess you follow me, I guess.
This was your plan.
This is kind of my thing, yeah.
You had the inkling of where this lost gold mine would be.
Yeah, I'd done all the reading and homework and logistics on the thing and where
and
we
now
should
you're
start.
Finally here. So and you're carrying a .40 cal just for... Bear.
Well, yeah.
Basically, I mean, right?
For bear or cougar or, you know, or people for that.
I got you.
You know? And so we start heading down over the bank. And I discover a game trail. It looks to be like a deer trail. So we start following that because to get to the creek is maybe about a football field in length to get down through there.
Game trail is the easiest path, basically.
That's right. Less path of least resistance.
Thorns and stickers and such.
And prior to that, I was looking at topographical maps, so I was trying to find the terrain, the easiest terrain that we could do anyway, because that
makes real good sense.
I'm a big, big planner. I want to plan for everything I can think of if possible. And so we make it down the creek, no problem. And we set up all of our equipment, sluice boxes and such. And we get to work, you know, looking for the gold, man.
Right.
We're having a good old time, BSing with each other.
Dude, that is, just on a side note, that is the most badass American thing there is to do. I know a few guys like you. A buddy of mine up in Wyoming still looks for it. And some of the worst, I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know? He just gets a, he gets any type of a lead, and it makes sense, he'll follow it. Because if it pays off, it pays off.
That's right.
So, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. Yeah, so we get to BSing and stuff and working, and I get focused in what I'm doing, and, you know, it's probably, I think we get down in there anywhere between 11 o'clock and noon. And I remember that a point when I'm working on the bedrock, scraping a crack and crevice out of a piece of bedrock that I'd found, I just got this feeling that I was being watched. It's just like you're being watched. And I turned and looked up the bank from which we'd come. And, of course, there's just a line of brush 20 feet in front of you, because you're right down there next to the water, so
right.
The vegetation's thicker.
Big time.
And I just kind of paused there for a moment looking. And I don't know, maybe 5-10 seconds of that, I kind of shrug it off and go back to working on what I was working on. And then I didn't think much of it after that point. And I don't know, we're probably down there about 2-3 hours. So it's getting about 3:30 in the afternoon. And I kind of make the call because, you know, I guess I'm the leader in this operation. And I said, okay, I mean, you know, we're still in springtime, you know, it's April, so it still gets relatively dark earlier.
Right, right.
And especially in the woods. And we were in a section with a lot of old growth trees, secondary trees, and first growth trees. So,
right.
You know, it can really get dark quick. And I said, I guess we need to probably do a cleanup and pack it up and get our butts up through the bank and back up to the vehicles and get out of here for the day. And of course, everybody was, you know, good for that. So we did. We did a cleanup. Darn it, we didn't find any gold at all, not even a freaking speck.
I was just going to ask you. Good cleanup right there.
I was so upset. But, you know, it seems to be a freaking running tail sometimes.
Right.
You're going to strike out more than you ever win.
Yep. But that's why they call it a strike, when you finally do hit.
Yeah. So, anyway, I put my backpack on, and I think I grabbed a couple 5-gallon buckets. They were full with hand tools and things. And I told everybody, I said, well, I'm going to make a trip up to the vehicles and, you know, drop this off, come back. You know, we're going to take us, you know, 2-3 trips, whatever it takes to get everything out of there. And they said, oh, okay. So off I go. And took me a couple seconds to find the little deer trail we were using to get back up out of there. But I got back out of there, no problem. Made it all the way back up to the vehicles, because we took my vehicle and theirs. And put the tools in the back of the truck and headed back down over the bank. Go get another load of equipment, tools, sluice boxes.
It's a lot easier bringing the tools down
as opposed
to bringing them out, because now you just use them. They're all wet. There's dirt and all that such.
Right.
So... yeah, you're probably really focused on that.
Yeah, you're just focused at the task at hand. You kind of get tunnel vision, which is not good. You should always be more aware of your surroundings. But I head back over the bank there and start heading back towards the creek. And about halfway down through there, I meet up with Alan and Robert. They've got equipment in their hands, too, that they're hauling out. And I tell them, I go, hey, you're about halfway there, right back behind me. Keep following the game trail. You guys are on it. Be there in no time. Back up to the vehicles. So I'm going back down to help Matt bring up some more equipment. And they said, okay, fine. So up they went and down I went to the creek. I get down to the creek. There's Matt. He's trying to get his stuff in order. And so I grab up some more equipment, and so does Matt. And Matt's just behind me or to the side of me as we're coming up through this deer trail.
Because you can't walk side by side on a deer trail.
Not a lot of times.
If anybody doesn't know what that means, a deer trail's not even 12 inches wide usually.
Right.
I mean, if I'm wrong, say so. But.
No, you're right. Yeah, absolutely. And so we come up the bank from the creek, and we're following this deer trail. And as soon as you get up onto the bank, the underbrush gets a lot thinner through there. And it's kind of a flat portion maybe 50 to 70 feet. There's a flat portion that you kind of got to walk through the brush. And then the bank gets steep and goes up, inclines for about 40 or 50 feet anyway.
Okay.
And we get to the base of this incline that we're going to now have to go up. And Matt has set down some of his equipment that he's been hauling. And I still have a 5-gallon bucket of tools in each hand. And my backpack's on. And I decide I'm going to come up this incline, because the incline's, like I said, maybe 40 to 50 feet. And then there's another kind of a terrace or a flat area.
Right.
And so I start coming up that incline. And as soon as I get to the top of it, now I've got to take a breather, you know, because it's tough going.
You bet. Two 5-gallon buckets and a backpack.
Right.
That's a little bit of weight.
And so now I'm huffing and puffing, and in the process, I'm trying to set down these 5-gallon buckets and get them balanced so they don't roll back down
which would suck.
So I don't want to pick them up and reload those buckets, you know. And so I no sooner get those darn buckets stabilized, and I'm breathing hard and catching my breath, when I look up ahead of me of where I believe we have to go. And that's exactly when I locked eyes on it for the first time. And Matt can't see what I'm seeing because he's 50 feet below me on the decline. So he can't see looking up and past me. But I can see directly in front of me.
Right.
This, we'll call it Bigfoot, okay? I don't know what term we're supposed to use for it nowadays. And it's squatted down in like a, looks like a frog. I said on my other interview, a baseball catcher's another good way.
That was a great analogy.
Waiting to receive the pitch, only its hands were between its knees. Its knees were flailed out to the side like a baseball catcher. And its arms and hands were between its knees, touching the ground. And it was looking straight at me with these black, beady eyes, but a very shocked facial expression, like an, oh, crap, I've been caught.
But he's also in the position of a defensive football player that's ready to launch itself.
That's true.
If need be.
One leap. And I'm guessing he's 30 at the most, 40 feet from me. He would have been on top of me with one leap, I'm guessing. He looked very athletic, very agile.
Now, for people, again, honestly, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're up on a flat landing. You just put the two buckets down, and Matt's 50, 60 feet behind you down an embankment.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't even hear you.
That's right.
You know what I mean? If he was above you and you yelled out, it'd be easier. But he's below you, and the trees will suck that up.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
And the sound of the water will drown out noises.
I slept next to a river last night in Oregon, and that's the exact thing. It sounded like people were talking all night. There's nobody out there. You can't hear anything other than the water. So go ahead. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. So I lock eyes with it, and that's when it gets this shocked expression. And I'm sure I probably had the same expression on my face. And in that area, there was absolutely zero underbrush, just two big old-growth fir trees that are probably 3 to 4 feet round, big old-growth trees, and zero underbrush. So there was nothing for this thing to hide behind at all. And it squatted with one of these old growth trees directly behind it, inches behind its back. So it squatted in front of this thing, and its shoulders are as wide as this big old growth tree. That's how I got the size comparison to it.
Dude. And real quick, because you didn't get a chance, no one said this in your last interview, I've had an opportunity to sit down and chat with you a couple of times now, and I've noticed that your attention to detail, plus what you do for a living, your attention to detail is really, really
important.
Good.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I've been that way my whole life since I was a little kid. And when we lock eyes and it gets that shocked expression, this thing starts swaying side to side in that squatted position. And I'm getting a little nervous when I see that behavior, because I've seen chimpanzees do stuff like that. And I don't know how to get a read on that, because sometimes that means they're angry, sometimes they're happy, you don't know.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm not an expert, so I don't know how to interpret this. So I'm interpreting it automatically as this is probably not positive. And so I turn and I look back down at Matt. And I tell Matt, hey, I says, get your butt up here next to me. I'm looking at a Bigfoot. I'm looking at one right now.
And I'm going to guess he left.
And of course, he's kind of still, you know, ready to mock me for it, because he gets this condescending tone to his voice. Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool. Just be chill with it, man. Just be chill. You know, it's not going to do anything. And then he tells me, I've got to get back to the creek and grab more stuff and equipment and tools and stuff and piggyback it to the base of this hill, is what he's trying to do. And I'm telling him, did you not just hear what I said? Because, I mean, if anybody needs to see it, it's the unbeliever.
Well, when you're saying this, do you remember if you broke eye contact with the Sasquatch?
Well, no, because that was the trick. I didn't want to take my eye off this thing, but I'm trying to look at Matt. So I'm keeping out of the corner of my eye, my peripheral vision, an eye on this thing while I'm trying to look down at Matt and scream and kind of yell at him. And as I turn to look at Matt, I notice out of the corner of my eye that this thing is going from this squat position, slowly standing up to an upright position. And when I see that movement of that out of the corner of my eye, I quickly turn my shoulders and head back to it. And when I do that, that thing squats back down into that position. I mean, quick. I said on the last time I was interviewed, like, free fall. I mean, I don't even think I could go from standing to a squat as fast as that thing did. And when it went back to a squat, I then turned back to Matt to try to coax him to get up next to me. And he's already on his way heading back down towards the creek to get more stuff.
And the closer he goes to the creek, plus he's already got like a little bit of an arrogance thing.
Sure he does.
You know, like he thinks you're just messing with him. He's going to climb up there and you're going to hit him with a tree branch or something. Something wacky. You know, just something like that.
And as I'm yelling at him a second time, again, I notice out of the corner of my eye, this thing is starting to stand up real slow again. So I turn back to it, and it squats back down.
Just like a wild animal would do. Turn your back on a bear or a mountain lion.
And I'm kind of thinking to myself, you're hiding behind what? There's nothing to hide behind. You know, you squatting back down before I see you. And I think it got that impression. Because after I lost sight of Matt, because he's now back down there at the creek, I then fully turn towards this thing and keep my position on it, right? And it realizes, I think, at that point that, well, the gig's up. I mean, yeah, there's nothing to hide behind. Here I am, and here you are, right?
You think it's dropping down just out of instinct? Like it's trying to hide, but there just ain't nothing to hide behind?
That's right. It was the instinct of hiding, I think.
And you couldn't have ran. You couldn't have turned and run because you'd have been dead.
Well, where am I supposed to
go? I shouldn't say dead.
Right.
But you ain't running down a 50-foot embankment. Humans don't work like that.
No.
You would have just ended up tumbling.
And I want to get out of there at this point. Where am I supposed to go when it's between me and where I have to go to get back to the vehicles?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting here with him. I can tell you right now that he's not the type of dude to tuck tail and run. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm going to preface what you're going to say next with that. So
okay.
Understand that.
Yeah, so the way I was born and raised, when it comes to cougars being a predator, you hold your ground.
Right.
And if you run, you're going to stir up that prey.
Well, that's what I was trying to say. I've seen people that have run into them, and I've actually seen it on footage. They'll turn their back on a cat that seems like it's not going to do anything. The minute you turn their back, they start coming.
Especially tigers.
You know what? Yeah, that's why in India they wear the mask on the back of their heads.
That's right.
For that exact reason. So go ahead.
Yeah. So Matt's gone.